Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, what's good?
Yo, what's up, Red? Yeah, I got you.
You hear me real good? Oh, you hear me loud and clear?
Microphone checker. What up, Red? Yo, what up, everybody? It is Big Red, Brother B, the menu, back in the house for the week. What's up? How y'all doing?
What's good, everybody.
All right. How you doing, Red? What's poppin'?
I'm chilling, man.
That's good.
Just maintaining. What's up with you?
Not much, man. Just I'm ready for this nasty snow to melt because it's getting nasty. Like, it's just dirty and nasty. I don't mind when it comes and it's not too much.
Oh, you know that.
Nice and white and fluffy. But now it's just like, yeah, it's just like straight nasty. So I'm waiting for all of this gook to melt. And we can just kind of move on with life. Like, if it's going to be cold,
yeah,
be
until
cold,
the next one comes. It's coming.
But you know what? I'd rather it be cold than have to deal with the ice and the snow.
That is
not a good combo.
Yeah, well, like I said, yeah, y'all might as well get used to this up until about maybe early April, because that's what they do, is get that initial storm and... What was it like? Was it a foot or wasn't it even that much?
Yeah, just in certain parts, I guess it was like a foot or more. I think, like, you know, people out on Long Island, they got hit worse. Me, right. wasn't too bad, you know. It's just that, you know, plowing the roads doesn't seem like everybody was really on their job, you know, with that. But for the most part,
they never off.
You know, it seems okay. Yeah, it seems okay. Yeah, it seems all right. So. No complaints. City's still moving. You know, it is what it is. But, yeah, man, for the most part, you know, about it, man. Just trying to, you know, keep my head above water. Making, you know, that's about it. That's really about it. Well, once again, what up, everybody? It's the menu on Blog Talk Radio. Big Red and Brother B in the house. Guest calling number 347-324-3395. That is 347-324-3395. And, you know, so tonight, it's just, you know, kind of a mix of, you know, what's going on in the news. And,
let's get this out the way first before everything. Oh, ASAP Rocky and Rihanna, they're having a baby, because that's all I see on my damn timeline, and I'm sick of it. It's like, all right, like, everybody have babies every day, B. Like, come on. Nobody want to keep you
I just recently saw that, and I just, okay.
Like, she's been pregnant for months. Like nobody, exactly. Like nobody didn't know that already. Like, okay.
Listen, to be honest with you, I don't pay attention to, like, media. I mean, all right, because we do the show, like, I have to be, you know, active on social media to a degree and, like, look into the news and stuff like that. But if it wasn't, like, for this show, yeah, I'd probably, if it wasn't next to me, I wouldn't know what's going on. because I'm just not into the news. Yeah, I'm not into the news like that because sometimes it's depressing. Like if the news, you know, spoke of more happier stories, then maybe I would indulge. But it just seems like every time you turn around, there's always something depressing, like the situation with the two cops that were killed.
Right.
You know, like what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, that was a hard thing to look at or even to know about. You know.
Yeah, Jason Rivera, 22.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was 22 years old. He died first, and then I think about a week later, his partner, Wilbert Mora, 27,
mm-hmm.
he died. His injuries.
That was, I didn't, when it happened, I heard about it, but I didn't really pay any attention, but it's just like, I think this week or between last week and this week, this is when I really paid attention because there's a building that I go to and they have their pictures up and stuff, you know, and then when I read the story, I said, I didn't know how young he was. I knew he was young looking, the 22-year-old, but I was like 22. I was like,
yeah,
he's
22.
Younger than my son. It's just like, to me, it's like, you know, I don't mean to put it out there, but it's like, why would you send somebody that young out there like that? Like, to me, it's like, you know, an older veteran, somebody that might have been, right, but it's like 22 years old. Why would you send him out there for something? But, I mean, once again, that job is not easy. You know that. It's not an easy job, and you just don't know what you're going to do when you get out there.
You know what, like you just said, like, you never know what's going to happen. Like, you can train, you can be on the job for years, but it's like anything can happen. Like, you can go in your kitchen and you can, you know, cook 100 times, but maybe that 101 time, you just might spill something. You may burn something that's so routine. It may, you know, things happen. And this is like the worst of the worst that can happen. And, you know, I get it. They were police officers, but that was just a job. Because who they were in their job to a degree means nothing compared to them being human, them making that sacrifice, and who they are to their family. So, you know, condolences to them, you know, and the families that, you know, have to suffer, you know, behind it. You know,
absolutely.
You know, we're not even going to mention his name. He died, so that's whatever. But you know, and it's not to be too dismissive or sound like disrespectful, but you know, I just have certain beliefs on things. But when it comes down to, you know, violence, you know, against other people, like, to a degree, I can understand if it's in self defense, I get it. But to just be that callous, just to be that cold and just take somebody's life for what? Like two people's life for what? You know, it's I mean, you don't deserve any recognition, you know.
Right.
None of that. That's just mean.
Right. Like I said, that job is not easy because once again you don't know what you're walking into, and it all depends on what what's going on at that time. And you know, like I said, when they do these 911 calls, like I said, depending on what the person that's on the other end, it depends on what you're saying or what you're telling the operator, and then it depends on what the operator is taking in or whatever. So a lot of that, you know, has a lot to do with it as well. And like I said, these officers have to be dispatched to these locations. So when they're being dispatched, they only going off of what the caller is telling the operator, what the operator has to tell them.
Exactly.
So they they go out there and they got to go out there either, you know, trying to alleviate the situation, or they got to be on some, you know, rough stuff because they don't know what they're walking into as well. So I don't know. It's just, like really feeling away because, like I said, he was young, you know. Both of them were young. They were both young because both of them are the same ages as my son, so.
Yeah, it's so crazy. Once again, you know, rest in peace to them, man. you know, to all the people in uniform, you know, be safe out there. Roberto Stoltz, be safe out there, brother. Yeah, so also former Miss America from 2019, Chelsea Chris.
Okay, I've heard, like, what is that? I've seen it, but I don't really know the.
Okay, so, you know, what the media is saying that apparently she committed suicide. And,
okay. Wow.
You know, she's 30, you know, she's 30 years old. She's a former 2019, you know, Miss America. And all I can say is this. You know, it may, you know, a lot of things may seem rosy to some people. You look at their life and be, oh, their life is great. Oh, this, this, that, the third. Oh, you never know, man. You never know what people are going through. You never know what's going on around them. You never know the people who are around them. Like, you just never know. I mean, listen, I'm still, like, bugged out, you know, about the whole thing with Robin Williams. And that was, like, years ago. It's like, wow, like, how did that, you know what I'm saying, you know, even, like, wow, that's crazy. But, you know, like I said, we never know what's, you know, what's happening with people. That's why sometimes you got to be careful how you talk to people, how you approach people, just how you deal with people, because you never know what they're going through. And for whatever they may be going through, you don't want to be on the receiving end, but at the same time, you don't want to be on the other end where you add more fuel to the fire.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You know, what's up, 8704? I see you on the air. You know, so that's basically that. But, yeah. So let's get into this, the McMichaels.
Oh, boy.
Who, so, yeah, so, all right, so I know you wanted to talk about this. So I did, you know, a little bit of homework on it. To those that don't know the, of course, I got to look for their names. The McMichaels, the father and son duo found convicted, you know, were convicted of killing Ahmaud Arbery. And, yeah. So these cats are now, you know, they've been convicted in state court. But now the feds are bringing charges.
Right.
So what they are looking for is to plead guilty to one of the hate crimes so that way they can possibly get just like the 30 years and it'll be in a federal prison of their choice. So basically, from, you know, what I was doing some reading on, the state in Georgia, it could be anywhere, but in Georgia, the state prisons are worse than the federal. You know, the federal is a little more lax, and their whole thing is they're concerned about the safety. See, I got to laugh a little bit. So they're concerned about these two gentlemen, they're concerned about safety, especially because the father was a former police officer. So, they're concerned about him, you know, them, those two being in a state prison. They would like to, you know, like I said, plead guilty to one of the charges and hopefully get to choose what federal prison that they go to. So since this is something you want to talk about, what is your take on all of this, Red?
It's like a slap in the face, just as the mother said. As a mother of two sons, that's like a slap in the face. Again, it's like, I don't understand how is it that you feel that you are so privileged. What gives you the right to think that you can be privileged to have choices of certain things that you want done? And guess what? You didn't give my son the choice of whether he wanted to live or die.
Exactly.
That's my take on it. You didn't give my son the choice. Oh, you already convicted him of what he was supposed to, supposedly what you thought he did or what you did, walking around, whatever it is you thought he was. So you already made him guilty. So guess what? Oh, he's guilty. You know what? We're going to do something about that. Because he's a suspect already. We already seen him. We already seen what he did. So what gives you the right to think that you can have a choice of where you want to go and what you want to do? And because, oh, you scared something's going to happen to you. Something needs to happen to you. That's your guilty.
Yeah. Yeah, I really don't understand why. Okay, you know what? To me, it takes a lot of balls. It takes a lot of guts to actually want to pick the prison where you go to. Like, so apparently,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, the state is, they're doing like this whole review or investigation about prisoner treatment, you know, compared to, you know, like, are they doing enough to make the prisoners feel safe, you know, in prison? Okay. I'm sorry. I'm just going to just jump off the deep end with this. Depending on what it is, you did a crime. You're going to jail. I mean, you went through the process. You know, they convicted you. They sentenced you. You're going to jail. Why should you feel safe? I mean, you do the crime.
Absolutely.
You pay with the time and whatever else comes along with it. It's jail. Like, it's prison. Like, you're in there with other criminals, whether they be thieves, burglars, murderers, you know, whatever, magicians.
Right.
Whatever the case may be, you're locked up amongst them. That's your world for however long you're there. Protection or being concerned about safety. So depending on what you were doing outside, you weren't being safe or you wasn't, concerned about anyone else's safety. And just like you said with the McMichaels, I don't see why they should be given some type of choice when they didn't give Ahmaud Arbery the choice of just jogging, just running, walking, just being free. He had no choice. They took all of that away from him when they became judge, jury, and executioner.
Absolutely.
So I don't even see why, you know, they would, you know, of course, you know, they're going to entertain it, but the judge did shoot it down. The judge said, nah, you know, it's not happening. They were denied.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
rightfully
Absolutely.
So. Rightfully so, because I think that's a ridiculous thing to ask for. It is insulting. It is a slap in the face, you know, to the mother, to the family,
yeah, and
in general.
The father, of course, but it's the family in general.
Yeah, it's.
But
is
the, you know,
the
I
face.
Was going off of, you know, what the, you know, the, you know, like I say, as her, you know, I was, you know, what's so funny? I was watching, the documentary that they had on that was around the same time of when all this was going on of, with Emmett Till. They had a documentary on channel, Channel 7 that came up. It was like a series. And basically, you know, it's the same thing. It's like, you killed my son, you did what you did, and nobody wants to be held accountable for it. And then you're covering stuff up, you know, covering things up just to say, okay, well, this is just another Negro boy we done, you know. It's just like, no, she fought. And that's how I see Ahmaud Arbery's mother the same way. Like, you're going to pay for what you did to my son. I'm going to fight for this because it's not fair to him. It wasn't fair to him. So how do you feel that you were supposed to get fairness and you wasn't fair to my child?
Exactly.
You know, you
and
wasn't fair to my child. You know.
Yeah, I, you know, it behooves me how the system kind of works in situations. But, you know, there are some people that were also, you know, on the whole thing of like, well, is this double jeopardy. So, no, it's not double jeopardy because one is on the state level and the other is on a federal level. Like, the federal is a separate entity that they're able to bring their own charges, you know, against, you know, the same people for, you know, the same crime. But once again, it's just on a federal level. So, I just really find it interesting that they would even ask that. But, you know, once again, this is the system.
This is 8704. What exactly are you shocked that they didn't ask?
I'm just shocked that they would ask for, you know, to be put in a federal prison of their choice. Not just the federal prison, but they actually be put in the federal prison of their choice and not in the, and they don't want to do the time in the state.
So there's a difference, you know, a clear difference in federal and state prison. Federal prison literally is cushy, higher security,
yeah.
But you have more options. You have more flexibility. You can maneuver differently. And it's less controversial.
Absolutely.
You're going to have more white-collar criminals than murderers, mm-hmm. rapists, and, you know, that's, you know, the difference between the state prison. But the problem is with state prison, it's lower level of security. So you know that the chances of them being killed within the first year are going to be high.
Oh,
right.
Federal prison is usually for a bunch of white people.
Well, it's club fed. You know, relax. Like, there's a big difference between.
I mean,
yeah, but then why do they feel they deserve that? Why do they feel they deserve that?
Because it's a level of security. Like, oh my gosh, like, you convicted us, but can you guarantee our safety? Can you guarantee that, you know, that we're going to survive?
Okay,
well,
they didn't think about that with her son. They didn't think about
mm-hmm.
that with her son.
Well, you know what the thing is? The father is a retired police officer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they're basically trying to use that as a thing of like, oh, well, he
right.
needs to be protected. Because if he goes in the state, you know, they're going to have to use resources to make sure that he's safe, or they're going to have to put him somewhere to make sure that he's safe. And all that is not going to happen. 9 times out of 10, in state prison, and this is a high-profile case, somebody's going to get them. As the way
right.
in federal, you know, not only is in federal, but he's also, they're willing to take a plea. They're willing to plead guilty to only get 30 years. So, once again, I don't really know how, you know, that works. If
it works
you
because
were convicted,
federal prison is higher. Mm-mm. Federal prison.
No, and... well, the state sentenced
them
to 100 years.
Yes, but in federal prison, it's because it's maximum, because it is maximum security. It changes your time.
So they're really looking to get 30 years,
correct.
And I don't
mm-hmm.
think that's right. And
right,
there's
absolutely.
Also $1 million. There's a $1 million lawsuit
you know,
going on.
People want to talk about the difference. That is the difference. It's either you do 10 years in state prison or you do 2 years in federal prison.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, nah, I would like to see. Well, the third guy, he was offered, you know, the possibility of parole anyway, but we're not even going to get into him. We're only going to get into these two characters who actually
yeah.
felt that it was okay. But they're going to run with that whole cop thing. But either way, the judge shot it down. And, you know, I'm glad the judge shot it down because they don't deserve, you know, they don't deserve that. So
nope.
I guess if they don't get what they want, the jury selection will be starting, you know, next week. The whole, you know, well, we want to be moved to club fed. If it doesn't happen, then, you know, it's going to be what it is. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, all around is just very disrespectful. And it's sad. But also along those same lines, So I was doing some reading, and it's interesting. The man that bought the gun for Kyle Rittenhouse, he was charged. And he checked this out. So he was charged, and he's taking a plea deal. While this dude that actually did the killing, the shooting, and the people died, is a free man.
Oh,
ain't that some shit?
Yes. Ain't that?
Wait. I buy a gun for you. You go out and shoot somebody, kill two people. You shoot three people, two die, and you're free. But I get locked up.
But I gotta go to jail. It's like, are you kidding? And then my thing is that you expect people or just people in general, not just only black people, but just people in general, to trust the justice system. Like, you expect us to trust the justice system, and you doing dummy jackass stuff like that. Like, are you kidding?
Exactly.
Right now?
Yo, listen, Dominic Black,
like, who does
he's 20 years old. Dominic Black, 20 years old. Was charged, not black man, his name is Dominic Black, 20 years old, was charged in November 2020 with two counts of delivering a dangerous weapon to a minor, resulting in death. I'm sorry, this made me cough for a minute. I just find that so ass backwards. And
yes, it's like,
like, does Kyle Rittenhouse, like, laugh at this dude? Or, like, what does this dude say to him? Like, yo, you got me locked up. Like, I did this favor for you, and this is what you did, and this is what I get. It makes me wonder about the system, whether it be, you know, in New York or anywhere. The system is just across the country. It's humorous. To a degree, it's ass backwards in some cases. I really don't believe justice is blind. I think it just, you know, it sees what it wants to see when it wants to see it. It's too much, you know, too much misinterpretation of the rules and laws. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a shell game, because as much as people wanted to talk, you know, and shame the victims, and talk about, oh, yeah, one was the pedophile, one was this and one was that. Listen, I don't know. I didn't know these individuals. You know, I don't know what they did in the past. Like, people, like, the media are quick to bring up people's backgrounds and talk about they were this and they were that. We've seen the same slanderous shit with Trayvon Martin. We've seen the same, you know, slanderous shit with Anton Sterling and, other killings and things of that nature, whether it was just regular law enforcement. They always want to, like, criminalize the victim. But morally, there's some things that you just can't, you just got to sit back and just like, are you serious? He buys the gun. He kills people. He's for the person that killed the people. He's not going to jail. The person who bought the gun gets charged. Wow.
George.
Yeah. I just find that, I just find that.
That's all you can say is it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know how that works. Like I said, you look at it and say, you trust justice. Every justice is going to be served this way. Yeah. It doesn't. So now with him being out of jail, Rittenhouse?
Kyle, yeah.
Right. So now he gets to go and just, move on with his life or something, or, you know.
He moves on with his life.
Somebody offer him a job. Somebody will give him a job.
He moves on with his life. He has no record. There's nothing that says that he was ever, charged with anything. He wasn't convicted because they found him not guilty.
Right.
He goes on living his life as if It was peachy. There's not even a blip in his record.
Wow. And meanwhile, you have young men of color that don't get to move on like that.
Of course not.
Well, that's also about, I'm not trying to be funny, but, you know, we're quick as black people to do protests. Versus sitting down at a table to have that discussion and do the let them know that we're taking a seat at the table to do A, B, C, D, E, F, and G regarding this person's, you know, whatever criminal activity that took place. Like, because at the end of the day, white people have attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
And those attorneys are going, whether they are guilty or not, it doesn't matter if they're guilty or not guilty. Their job as their attorney is to make sure that they don't get sentenced and that they are found not guilty. And if they are found guilty, to make sure it is the lightest of the lightest of the lightest of the lightest sentence that they can go for the nature of the crime that they were charged with.
Mm-hmm.
We don't
That's
do that
crazy.
As black people. We don't do that as black people. We hoop and holler in protest versus contacting attorneys to advocate on our behalf, make some type of arrangements to, you know, to pay their lawyer fees or find grants, because there are grants, pay attorney fees, to reach out to third-party organizations to pay the attorney fees in order for us to have representation. We also don't even ask as black people to, if you have a mental, you know, this is side note, but it's all in together with Kyle Rittenhouse, the dude who shot up the church down in Charleston, South Carolina. They had mental health issues. There is a such thing called mental health court. We as black people do not ask to have our case tried and put before a mental health court judge.
Right.
Probably because a lot of black people don't know about it.
Exactly, or a drug, because there is a drug court.
Yeah, they don't make
that. It's under drug and mental health. And the only reason why I know that is because my uncle, you know, newly retired as of January 1st, from being the drug and mental health court judge. He has said it numerous occasions, black people don't come to his court.
Because black people
do
I'm crazy. You know,
black people don't come to his court. It's a whole
I
problem.
Know,
They recommend programs. So you attend your drug treatment program, you attend your therapy sessions, and you make sure that you do this for 1 year. You come back in 1 year, and if you have completed every program without any issues, you're set free and you're clear to go.
Yeah, but is that always the, you know, the, I mean, who does that really work for? You know what I'm saying?
It works. It works for white people. It doesn't work for black people because black people are never before that judge, and black people are never going requesting that they be placed in mental health or drug court. They're not asking because they don't know. It's lack of information, but it's also lack of information being done in the black community, because for those who do know that information, they don't share it.
And that's sad.
Well, yeah. We don't, either we don't pass on information or we choose to not educate ourselves on certain things because either, like you just said, Red, like, oh, I ain't crazy.
Yeah, I'm not crazy. He's not. So-and-so's not crazy.
But you're sitting there making invisible pancakes. Okay, you're not crazy. Something wrong. Something wrong if you're making invisible pancakes or, you know, whatever the case may be, if you have a drug habit or something like that. I mean, listen, some way, listen, we all got some little issues. Some people have a lot of issues. But, you know, for the most part, you know, everybody has some minute things going on with them. So to sit there, and especially living in New York City, but living in this world in general, if you want to sit there and say, oh, I don't have any mental issues, no, you're lying. So road rage at times is a mental issue.
Oh, yeah.
And shit, I be having that shit a lot. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, even that,
that's to the point.
That's the situation.
Well, you won't have it to the point where you're, you know, you're going to harm somebody you may want to, but, you know, I was, you know, not to cut across, but I was watching court TV, and I've seen two cases so far of road rage, where, you know, it resulted in someone's death. And one of them, the guy was on a bicycle and killed somebody in a car off a road rage.
Listen, I don't know what it is. Somebody had posted something on Facebook, and they were talking about, once again, it relates to the whole mental issue thing. But it's like,
we
you know, people are under pressure. It's like, you know, especially in like cities, but just in general, the life that, you know, society that we're in now, it's like everybody is under some type of pressure. Like, we're all in our own individual pressure cooker. You never know what someone is going through. And the thing is, when it comes down to driving, when sometimes it's the littlest things that can set you off. Me, it's because, listen, if I'm being courteous, be courteous too. But when you start doing disrespectful stuff like cutting in front of me and something, like, listen, I work hard for my shit. And if you swing your car in front of mine or you happen to hit me or you do something stupid, of course it's going to set me off, because it'll set anybody off sometimes, because you just don't want your stuff messed up, or you just don't want to be broken out of your zone, simple and plain. You know, I mean, no, the world ain't fair, but there's certain things that you just do not want to have to deal with when you walk out of your door, or when you walk in your house, for that matter. Certain things you just don't have to deal with. And all it takes is for someone to do something just out of nowhere, and shit just pops off. Road rage is just really one of those things. And do I keep a bat in the car? Absolutely. Like, one time somebody cut me off, I got in front of them, then they got behind me, and they had the nerve to get out of their car and start to approach. And I'm like, yo, totally unnecessary. And the thing is, I don't know what you have. I know I'm sitting in my car. I don't know. For you to get up out of your car and approach somebody else's vehicle, you're asking for trouble in the worst possible way. But people do it.
Yep.
People do it.
That's what I'm saying. So, it's dangerous. That's, you know, that all of that has to do with, you know, a mental, you know, like I said, you know, depending on, because the what I was looking at, the guy was saying that, you know, he had got hit before, somebody cut him off, and, you know, he rides his bike a lot. And he said when he got in, you know, he was like left in the street, nobody wanted to help him into. So that could have been, so when this happened the second time, that it's like a trauma. So then he's reverting back to what happened to him. So he's thinking, oh, that's going to happen to me again, and these people don't care. And, you know, that a lot of that, you know, probably got to him, because he's probably, you know, like, nah, I'm going to take care of this. But it was that whole thing was just like a whole other level going on there.
Yeah. So check this out. So to those who may or may not be familiar with Chris Noss, he played Mr. Biggs on Sex in the City. Now, I didn't watch, you sound a little muffled, Red. I never watched the show, The Equalizer, with
Queen Latifah. Yeah, that's my show.
Yeah, I never, you know, because like I said, you know, I don't really watch much TV. So I heard Chris Noth was on the show, but he was taken off the show because apparently there have been some sexual allegations.
Yeah.
Some allegations against him. And there's a new one where he apparently assaulted some girl who was 18, whatever, back in like 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
I think that's because I've been looking for this show. It hasn't been on in a while, and I heard about that, but now that you've given me more details, that's why they haven't put the show back on in about a month. Oh, now I know.
Yeah, because he was accused. I think there's probably a second or third woman that has come out and said that he had, sexually assaulted her. Now, mind you, I didn't even hear about, the first two.
Right.
This is all just and once again, you're talking to somebody who doesn't really, pay attention to the news or watch the news and stuff like that. So he was on the show doing whatever he was doing until it became too much. And while the third person came out, and it's just now we gotta shut this down.
Yeah.
And, it's interesting how now, it's getting, just a little more recognition. But you know what, that makes me wonder. So I got to ask this question. We live in a different world now compared to years ago where, you can be somewhere, like you said, you can be at work with a coworker, and a coworker can come and be like, yo, hey, what's up, Red? And put their arm around you and y'all just laughing and joking about a water cooler.
Mm-hmm.
But now we live in a world where someone can do that and you can be like, oh, you made me feel uncomfortable. I felt that you putting your arm around me, that was sexual. And then that's it.
Right.
It's crazy how, is there a misinterpretation, or is this people are just more in their feelings now? What do you think?
I think it's more of people just overdoing things now. You're doing too much. Depending on, or maybe it's an ego thing with some people where they feel that, I look a certain way, so if this person is touching me or he's coming after me, it depends on the situation. That's the one thing I could say. Like I said, if you feel that you're that high and mighty and you feel that somebody can't be friendly to you or whatever, okay, it just depends on how you're taking it. It depends on, sometimes, once again, somebody's mental health. It depends on, if you're having a bad day or not. Maybe that particular day you didn't want to be bothered. But then you have some people that, I'll say with men and women, sometimes if the woman doesn't want to be bothered with the man, but the guy is still going on, I have to kind of shut you down a little bit, because it's just if I'm telling you I don't want to be bothered, but you keep pursuing and pursuing, then you get to a point, because some men don't know where their limit is, or some men don't know that, she don't want to be bothered, let me just leave alone. And that goes for women as well. It's not, either way. So I think a lot of that depends on the two individuals involved. Just as you said before, there's a lot of, tension going on now, especially with the Omarion or whatever the hell you want to call, whoever, Verara Rant, whatever is going on. It's a lot of tension, so people don't want nobody touching nobody any daggone way. Because they think, they got, cockroaches, whatever is going on around here. They think somebody's got something. So guess what? Whatever. So it's I say it depends on that.
Any thoughts on it, 8704?
I have to agree. You never know what a person is going through. Do some people will take it to the extreme? Yes. And I think they take it to the extreme because they're crying for attention when they take it to the extreme. But then there are individuals where we don't know their life story. We don't know what has happened to them. We don't know. And someone touches them. That's real. And I think that the people where nothing has ever happened to, just, they want to play victim when it comes to that.
Yeah,
when it comes
cases.
In some cases. I'm not saying in all cases, because I feel that if I – we have to know the difference. And I think some people just take it too far when, you know, when you already know that it was not meant to make you feel uncomfortable or inappropriate in any way, shape, or form, because you can laugh and touch someone's shoulder. And Becky's going to sit there and say, oh, my God, it's sexual harassment.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think they run with that as well. I think
they do.
Like, purposely, they run with that. Because
mm-hmm.
they know,
mm-hmm.
oh, he's going to get in trouble. All I have to do, or maybe because, I'll say this, they may have been trying to get with him, and then he started going with somebody else. He's still, you know, like, all right, you know, I'm going to still be cool with you. But now, oh, now you're mad because he's dealing with somebody else or something. Like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
It goes all kinds of crazy ways of thing.
No, I mean, it's just so many different things that I think as a society we need to look at. You know, and I didn't say anything earlier. I think when, you know, I think in the very beginning, I want to say, maybe within the first 10 minutes of the show, you were talking about the mental health. Well, you slightly skimmed across the mental health of 2019 Miss USA Chesley. I think the sad part is she publicly cried for help.
I believe it.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote an essay.
Like, I'm only saying it to say, as a 30-year-old female, high, and I want to say high profile, she's a high profile 30-year-old female who is also an attorney for two states, for North Carolina and South Carolina.
She,
you know, high
profile. That's a lot of pressure.
And she felt the pressure.
Yeah. Yo, but once again, you know what I'm saying, it no matter how much, I mean, it's easier said than done, but, yo, real talk, you know, there's other avenues. There's other, yeah, and there are other avenues. It's like, yo, just talk. Like, you know what I'm saying, some people feel that talking is not useless. You know,
it's not useless, but it just doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah, it doesn't. But you know what, we have to find something that works. Because, you know, taking yourself out is not the answer. It's not the solution. You know, to somebody who was, you know, I'm, you know, still kind of, you know, thrown off about it and, you know, being affected by it years ago. It's just the fact that it's not the answer. You know, it really mm-hmm. isn't. You know, and, you know, I think we need to be more open in terms of helping people, listening to people, creating workshops, you know, things of that nature. Like, there really needs to be more of an effort put towards, you know, stuff like suicide and mental, you know, health. The world is busy.
Go ahead, the world is busy.
Yeah, the world is busy, but we can't be too busy to forget about,
people.
You know, forget about people.
So here's my question. This, you know, this is real talk. Red, please chime in.
Mm-hmm.
Who, you know, you have all these professionals putting together mental health forums, advocating for individuals. And we can go back to dealing with the attorneys and the Ahmaud Arbery case. Like, we can talk about that. But imagine all the pressure being put on those attorneys in those positions. Who is able to help lift the burden of their pressure that they're facing, that they're so busy trying to relieve the pressure off of someone else?
All right.
Well, I mean, you know, but, you know, I got to look at it like this. I'm sorry. If that's what you signed up for, like, you know what you signed up for. Like, you know, usually 9 times out of 10 going into something, you know what you're signing up for. So it's like, what excuses do you make when you say you can't handle it, when you know that this type of shit was going to go down? Like, there was going to be some point where the pressure was going to be on extremely. The thing is, you have to ask yourself, really, can you deal with it? Like, if something, like a high-profile case or something goes on, like, can you actually deal with it? Are you ready to deal with something of that magnitude? Because, once again, you are responsible for saving someone's life, but at the, you know, or saving someone's freedom compared to, you know, a victim who probably deserves justice, not get it. Like, you could, you fight, you know, depending on, if you're a prosecutor or defense, depending on your role, like, you could be responsible for a guilty person going free. Like, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you have to be prepared for that. Like, you really have to honestly ask yourself, like, am I really up to this? But then it takes on another life, because then people start to become detached. You know, sometimes you can have that type of job, and yeah, exactly. It can turn you into something else.
I'm going to put it out there. Like, I work for Long Island County government. I don't have a problem saying that. And even for my job, like, for me, my personal title at my job is literally to look at everything that's happening between government and community, break down the details, see where it's flawed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm dealing with a situation mm-hmm. now where DSS has failed an individual. Literally, failed
yeah.
individual.
Mm-hmm.
And say it's a black female. I'm like, you know, without giving information, I'm going to give information. Black female, two kids in a shelter, left in an abusive situation, and then the only way for her to leave that situation is to go be placed in a shelter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Two children who are... Yeah, but see, you know, that's one piece of the pressure, right? Then you have her two children where they both require court mandated, require to be in therapy. One
and those
one
are probably
child,
the conditions.
Those are the conditions, because she's in,
yeah.
there's a stay away order, a protection order, the whole nine yards put in place. Now, along with that, you know, and I'm not saying it's every case for everybody in a shelter, but this person had no job, depended on her significant other to be the sole provider. Now you don't have that because you needed to leave the situation. You're in a shelter, no family, no job, no means of transportation. You have two children. They both need to go to school. One child needs physical therapy, occupational therapy, you name the therapy, that child needs the therapy.
Mm.
Lack of adequate yeah. child care, because the child care
Whoa.
Provider will not allow the therapist to come in the house.
Oh, wow.
To provide the therapeutic services. You know, if you're on, I don't know how it is in the city, but for Long Island, if you're receiving DSS, any type of TANF assistance, if you don't have a job or if you're not in school, they place you on a work site.
That's crazy.
Okay.
The counselor didn't look at where she was staying in the shelter, didn't ask her what was her barriers to employment. This is things that I look at every day. Placed her anywhere, didn't look at the distance from her shelter to the work site, didn't look at how the kids are getting to and from school, how they're getting the daycare, didn't look at a curfew put in place, because a lot of shelters have curfews in place, and placed her somewhere where she had to take three buses there, three buses back, and still end up
oh,
late
wow.
because the child care provider is not picking up the kids on time. It's a whole process. Mind you, she's dealing with that by herself. How much pressure can
right.
somebody actually take before they snap and break?
Right.
Yeah.
That's a lot for one person, but for me, I see situations like that every day. I'm not gonna lie, I'm a sensitive individual. When it comes to people, their expenses, their experiences, I'm compassionate, and I'm thinking about, oh, what if I was in their situation?
Right.
How would I handle this? How should I handle this? So it is my, it's actually my responsibility to figure out ways to handle it. How can we help her to help herself, to get her on in a better place for living? How can we provide that wraparound service?
But that also takes a toll on one individual
where now you have to figure out, and I'm going to be honest, there are 170 people who are employed in my department, 3 are black. So you tell that counselor you need to be sensitive. You need to have compassion for this individual because this is what they're going through. And the response from a white person is they're lazy.
Mm-hmm.
They're not lazy. You've never even been in that situation. But it's the pressure that a person who wants to figure it out, who wants to help, that's a lot of pressure for an individual to take.
Right.
And it works the same way in a courtroom, trying to figure out that pressure. Like, okay, you know that even if the person is innocent, sometimes there's so much evidence. Speculative, and they have to deal with saying no. That's not it. And at some point, you just give up. I can't keep putting myself on repeat. At some point, you give up.
Yeah, no, they do. But with 3 minutes left,
your mental health is down. Is down, and everything else is down. So, you know, I'm not trying to be funny, but to go back to the beginning of the whole conversation. They're looking for an easy way out. That father and son, they want to feel secure and safe. I don't want my mental health to be tested.
Yeah. Well, you know, this month we definitely got a dedicated episode, you know, to mental health, you know, in our community, you know. But with the last 2 minutes or 3 minutes, I do want to bring up this Joe Rogan and his asinine statement about the black and white thing is so strange because there's a different spectrum of shades of people. And unless you're talking about someone who's like 100% African from the darkest place where they're not wearing any clothes all day. And yo, Joe Rogan, you're an asshole. But I'm sure for the people that defend him, listen, to me, it doesn't take a shot at his character, but I do believe that you said something real stupid. And, yeah, you kind of got to own up to that, just like your misinformed statements about COVID. Yeah. So to those who think that, you know, Joe Rogan and his, you know, different shades and take on, you know, what it is to be black, yeah, good luck with that. It didn't make any sense, but that's the grudge for the day of the week.
Absolutely.
8704, Big Red. Nice show. We'll catch you guys next week. Remember, Absolute Truth on Monday nights at 10 p.m., but we'll catch you next week, Tuesday. The Menu, another one in the can. Everybody have a blessed week. Good night, y'all.
Hey, guys. Good night, guys.
Yeah.
Be safe.
And, yo, always remember, mind your mental.
Mind your mental.
All right, peace, everybody.
All right, peace.